I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association, and welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. We recently concluded our May conference in Orlando. If you have never attended a TSI event, I am sorry, but you are missing out. And here are just a few of the highlights. We had presentations and panels. We had executive networking dinners. And of course, the opportunity to meet your favorite podcast host in person. And I have to tell you, I had so many conference attendees come up to me and say they are loving Tectonic. And when I hear that, it just warms my heart. So to give you a taste of the experience, we are playing the audio from the panel discussion at the conference. Enjoy. Folks, let's take a seat. We're going to get right into it, and we're going to start with introductions. I think I'll start at the very end there, if you want to go first.
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is Pattabhi Raman, and I run digital experience at Informatica. So I have two personas to my role. One is my team is responsible for building the digital ecosystem that helps our partners, customers, and our post-sales functions to operate at scale with content, data, AI, and automation as the key foundations. And my second part of the role is, as a consumer of that, I run the digital segment of the customer success as well.
Perfect. Welcome, Shally.
Great. Hi, I'm Shally Stanley, and I lead global delivery within our professional services organization at Salesforce.
Jillian.
Hi, Jillian Alexander. I lead our learning services organization at OpenText. It's a global team responsible for the delivery and development of our product training and certification. And we service our entire ecosystem and our entire product portfolio.
And last but not least, the guy who makes me look good.
That is my job. But I also lead our analytics and software engineering teams. Thanks for having me on the stage.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure. So the first thing we're going to do is we're just going to get the use cases out on the table here. So everyone's going to describe how they're using AI, either what's already deployed or they're in the process of deploying. And I'm going to actually, Jillian, I'm going to start with you because Jillian was the first case study interview I did because Maria Manning Chapman, when I asked all the researchers, I said, is anybody doing anything interesting with AI? Maria was like, ooh, pick me. And I'm like, what's going on? She goes, oh, education services, you got to talk to Jillian. They're doing some really cool stuff. So it was my first, you know, toe in the water on this. And I was so blown away by the case study. It really motivated me to do more here. But tell us what you're doing there at OpenText.
Well, yeah, we started this journey almost 3 years ago. We were really struggling with our capacity or ability to scale time to market with our content. OpenText is a very acquisitive company. So in the last, few years, our products had expanded four times, but our capacity was flat. So we knew we had to look at ways to really scale and grow efficiently. And the content development seemed like a great area. We really focused on three key areas initially. Text-to-speech, so making sure that we could automate that with AI and really gain a lot of efficiencies. We also looked at translation. We have an organization that does adoption, and our customers speak many languages, and so translation was really important in unlocking value for them. And then probably the one that you got the most excited about was we joined an early adopter program with a company called Learn Experts, and we fed into the roadmap. We had a lot of our own use cases that we were trying to drive to accelerate that development cycle, and they were just phenomenal to partner with. And where the product started and where it came and how we're using it today, it's been a really, really cool experience.
Well, what blew me away in that conversation was the fact that because you guys had just done a massive acquisition,
yeah,
and your team went from supporting something like, tell me the numbers again, the initial products and then after acquisition.
Yeah, products? So we We have hundreds of products, but for us, we were supporting 50 on the OpenText side, and then we acquired, like, we at least doubled it.
Yeah.
And the way that we support those products is very rule-based, and we have certifications, and we build from novice to, you know, mastery. So it ends up about 8,000 hours of content in industry. We've got 96 rule-based paths, and again, it's across the different portfolios. So,
yeah, exactly. So the
it's ability, material.
The ability for you to support that entire new portfolio and basically keep resource flat and leverage technology to do it was, I was like, wow, this is something. So that blew me away. Shelly, how about the Salesforce story? What's the use case here?
So in professional services, part of what we were looking at is how do we take our well-established processes, something that you talked about this morning, Thomas, and really apply AI to it to be able to drive higher quality, a differentiated customer experience, or faster outcomes to accelerate the value that we could deliver to customers. And so we looked at our project delivery lifecycle, just how you execute a project. And we also looked at the governance that goes along with that to say, what are the key moments that we need to be looking at to get ahead of risk, be very proactive about that, to deliver those higher quality outcomes. So we broke that process apart and looked at different ways in which AI could be plugged in. Simple things like using transcription, right? We all have a lot of recorded meetings these days, getting the transcripts and being able to summarize those kinds of things were quick wins. To those that are a little bit more involved, and so in our project delivery lifecycle, using things like user story generation, using AI for that, is a massive acceleration and quality opportunity. Code generation or configuration generation is another massive acceleration and quality opportunity. And then the one that my team always raves about is the testing acceleration that we can drive by looking at test case generation. So these are all very basic project delivery parts of the life cycle, but there's a lot of AI opportunity there. And also on the risk prediction and risk side to look at that.
I know from the session that you and I had, the thing that I was super impressed by is it was the first time I'd seen from a PS perspective where you really had a roadmap and you talked about the entire life cycle and you're saying, look, we see AI in this entire life cycle. And the potential's there, right? So there's just use case after use case that can unfold here.
It is.
So there's
a
lot of upside.
I think the thing we're looking at in that roadmap is what's going to come first.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting where if my roadmap from 6 months ago versus my roadmap now shifts because some technologies just get there faster. The approvals get there faster. Yeah. There's a lot of implications that shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have the Informatica case. So now you guys have been great partners with TSI. I've done multiple case studies with you folks on different topics over the years, and I really appreciate you leaning in and sharing your lessons here. But tell us the use case in play here.
So, I'm responsible for the AI program across all the post-sales function, but, you know, very specific to this topic, I'll probably talk about the customer success side of things. And, one of the biggest challenges that we always try to solve is to understand, is the customer on the right path to realize value, right? Mm-hmm. They have invested so much within your organization. Are they realizing value, right? So now, you go ask a CSM in the high touch segment, probably, they're going to take some time, get the answers for you, probably 4 or 5 hours. But you go ask someone in the long tail segment who's managing like 200, 400 accounts, it's just not scalable. So the way we look at this is from multiple angles, right? So there are different variables that, contribute to this answer that we can provide. First and foremost is, when an opportunity is closed or when a sale is made, what is the quality of the sale? Is this something that a customer had a good use case before buying the software, or did they just sell it because of whatever reason they had budget for now, which it's just a 1 year? So immediately, as soon as the sale is made, we will understand. We use AI to understand the renewal propensity. Is this even going to renew 1 year down the line or 2 years down the line? Second thing is the customer on track with all the milestones? So they have a project plan, right, on how they want to, how long the project is going to be, what are the key milestones that they want to achieve? And then the third thing is the customer engaged with us, right? Mm-hmm. Fourth thing is, are there any early warning systems that we can look at? Fifth one is the customer going to renew, right? What is the probability of a renewal? And the last one is, yes, customer is going to renew, but are they going to grow? Are they going to expand? So we take all these different parameters, and then we come up with, obviously using the power of predictive AI, and now with the power of generative AI combining together, we provide all those insights to our CSMs and across the post-sales functions, because it's not just the CSM role, right? It's support is involved, your professional services involved, and at the end of the day, your renewals rep are involved. So they need to have that complete 360-degree view of the customer, of what's happening. So we sort of use AI to solve these problems, to answer whether the customer is on track to realize value.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, in that, the use case you're talking about there, I mean, really data-driven insights and assessment to make sure their adoption's on track, et cetera, is just a classic use case for customer success and taking out, a lot of the grunt work of trying to figure that out. I mean, and just really leveraging the technology to do that. I mean, no doubt a winning case. And then last but not least, TSIA, as JB and I say all the time, we eat our own dog food, we drink our own champagne. So if we are talking and writing about things, we believe in those concepts. So what are we doing with AI at TSIA?
The champagne is better than the dog food.
Dog food, yeah, I found that as well.
So we're getting AI wins across the company. I'll share examples in three different operational areas. First, in content creation. I mean, it is such an accelerator for our authors to manage writer's block. It's a great way to check your grammar, polish your words, and as you hand that off to the editing process, editors can leverage AI for grammar. They still have to read from top to bottom. You still need to be thought leaders, but AI is just really accelerating our ability to create higher quality content. And then tagging. I mean, tagging is a big part at TSA of what we do. Our knowledge graph goes something like this. We help technology leaders overcome business challenges by adopting practices to improve performance. And each of those has its own database. So business challenges, we've got around 800 business challenges. And for them to be effective, to make our portal more effective for our members, to have good signals to our company, we have to tag those business challenges to every piece of content that we publish. To do that consistently in an unbiased fashion has been very difficult the last 10 years. Now we've automated it, and we've automated it in a way that really optimizes the user experience. Another one is we've been patient with our video platform provider, and they finally started to offer on-demand transcription services. So now every Tectonic podcast, every webinar, every conference video, we automatically generate the transcript. And then through using AI, we can quickly summarize those. And so I brought a prop.
Okay.
So my peers on the stage all had a Tectonic podcast with you where you asked them the questions that you're asking us today. And so in my room, I asked those three questions to each of your podcasts. And I already know what you're going to say. So it's amazing, such an enabler. The second use case is our data engineering team. We generate scores for everything. We have an adoption score to predict risk in terms of attrition risk. And then we have offer scores. And we see everything that we make for our customers, the webinars, the reports, the polls, just as offers. And we're constantly trying to score your affinity towards one of these offers. Why? So that we can make good recommendations to help you overcome your challenges and so on and so forth. So we've been tracing through these structured connections through business challenges and using structured data to do scores for the last 10 years. Now, with large language models, all the unstructured information, whether it was a conversation, an open text feedback at the end of a webinar, these Slido questions that keep coming in, now we're able to take that unstructured text and get a brand new signal to indicate whether it be churn risk or your propensity to really need this most recent podcast. And so we're just so excited that the process that's already in place is just going to get amplified by the advent of these large language models. And then the last group that I work with are our software engineers. Code creation, absolutely. So if a developer has a well-defined problem, their first task is to get the AI assistant to create a draft of the code. And then they go through and edit it and revise it. And even when it's not a well-defined problem, there's this interplay back and forth with the agent of how the agent would do it versus how the developer would do it. And it's just creating more high-quality code at the end of the day. And then lastly, and we've had a lot of questions about data so far through the conference.
Absolutely. Yep.
That happens a lot at these conferences, and I'm a data guy, so I love it. One part that we've put a lot of time into is architecture and design. So how do we set up our databases, our systems, so that they work very well for our customers first and then for our employees second? And just to give you a glimpse in how long it takes, for some of the decisions for the portal, we had ongoing whiteboards and debates for 8 months. We looked for industry standards, and we could do it this way could be connected here and that way. Bringing in AI to give us ideas, and again, unbiased, objective ideas on how we could model things differently has been very valuable.
Yep, cool. Wow, I learned a lot. I don't know about you guys, but anyway, thanks. So now the next question is around how you are measuring success with these AI initiatives. And so I'm going to jump back to the customer success story first. You know, again, you're using telemetry here, get a better assessment of the customer. How did you determine if that was helping? How did you, the success metrics?
Absolutely. So, I mean, even before getting into the success metrics, I just want to talk about the approach, right? So we got business on board, okay? This was a business-led initiative, not like a DX-led initiative. So we asked them, hey, what are the pain points? What are the things that, you know, are redundant in your process? What is that you don't want to do, which is not a good use of your time? Rather, you would be using that to sell more or build your relationship with the customer. So that was one of the process that we used. So bringing in business to give us the priorities. Then the second thing that we did was we did a time study. We did a time study across our post-sales organization, right, for different functions. So we ran this whole time study for a span of 90 days to sort of understand, you know, where is the time being spent? What activities is taking up the most of your time, right? And, you know, it was not something to micromanage, but essentially record what is eating up most of the time and is there an opportunity for us to improve the process, right? And finally, the whole thought process of what is that we can do something which we have never imagined before, right? So these are the three key things that we sort of went with as an approach. And you'll be surprised, Thomas, I think, from a customer success standpoint, right? We saw that they are spending almost 35 to 40% of the time in collecting information from different systems.
35 to 40%? Is that what you're saying?
35 to 40% of the time. So in collecting information from different systems, preparing for QBRs and, you know, your regular meetings with customers. And the same time, our renewal reps, around 25 to 30% of the time, which is being spent in the beginning of the quarter as they review all the opportunities, right? To understand going through those 70, 80 pages of contract, what does the red lines mean? Is there an upsell opportunity? You know, is there a price cap? So that was a lot of manual effort that was going in, right? So now, when we did this time study, all these things sort of, you know, it sort of started lighting up like light bulbs. And that was the in a moment for us to say, okay, here is an opportunity. Here are some quick wins that we should do. Here are some transformational stuff that we can do in the long term. So quick wins is something that you will probably are going to be delivering in the next 4 to 5 weeks versus something which will go into your next quarter roadmap. So the outcome of that was, you know, we built a lot of, you know, CSMs are spending time preparing for customer QBRs. So what we did was we used GenAI to generate an account executive summary. Okay. So now it has to bring data from different systems. You have the support system, customer success system, the sales opportunities. Then you have the product data coming in to sort of say how the product is being used. So now something that a CSM was spending like 3 to 4 hours to sort of, you know, prepare decks for QBRs to understand what's happening on an account, and not just for them, right? Even for the functions outside of the CSMs to also understand what's happening. Now it's just a click of a button.
Yep.
Okay, we are able to generate that, and you know, in 30 to 40 seconds, the latest update that happens, and you know, a daily update that goes in. Similarly, on our renewal side of things, we have our renewal reps used to spend 6 to 7 hours on an opportunity across the life cycle of its opportunity.
Because, how many? Right, say that again.
Yeah, right. So across 6 months of time,
Okay. They
used to spend like 6 to 7 hours time to, because it goes through multiple iterations, negotiations, mm-hmm. legal is involved, deal desk is involved, then you know all the conversations with the customers. So now what we have done is we sat down with the renewal rep, trying to, what is that you guys do? How do you sort of look at you know, what is your best process to identify the different data points that we need to summarize? Now, using that, you know, again, from different sales opportunities, success plans, what's happening on the product side of things, we are able to give them a clear-cut, generated document about an opportunity, okay? And when you compare it to the time study that we did and what it's saving at yep. this point of time,
yep.
we are looking at almost, just in the SMG side, just in the renewal side of things, we are saving almost 1 year's worth of time.
Wow.
1 year's worth of time.
Yeah.
Okay. And now with all this, you know, with all these things, obviously now we expect the CSM, sorry, the SMGs or the CSMs to have more time on the hand so that they can use it for more high-value conversations and engagements with the yep. customers. So we look at the benefits from a financial, you know, as a growth accelerator, what are the financial benefits, what are the efficiency metrics, and also from a customer experience at scale. From a financial aspect, I think almost 200 basis points of our NRR is influenced by AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a big number.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have seen almost close to 4 to 5% growth in the consumption of our products based on some of the recommendations that, you know, that our AI model provides for new use cases or new services. What is the next best offering that we can provide? So we have seen the product adoption go up, you know, 4 to 5% quarter over quarter.
Wow.
And from a customer scale standpoint, we have introduced a Copilot within the product itself. So it not only answers technical questions about the product, but also customers' data questions, right? Mm-hmm. What are my sources? What are the connections? You know, where am I seeing a lot of errors? What is the best way to connect different data sources? So we have sort of deployed our use cases across all these functions, and you know, we have started seeing some early results already, and we are just scratching the surface.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the key things, and I made this point in the opening keynote, but I think it's an important one here, is as you were describing, so how do we know, you know, what the ROI is, the benefits, et cetera? You know, you are studying these workflows, you're doing things like time studies, you're really understanding first
yes.
Where are the sinks, yes, holes? And then you're saying, okay, we're going to apply AI. Then let's look and assess how much time was saved. Again, I think that is a winning approach as opposed to just throwing some tools out there and hoping people use it. So definitely.
AI is not a goal, right? It's just a means to the solutions, right? Yeah. I think that is a very important lesson. Don't just throw AI as a solution to every problem. It's probably an overkill, right? Identify small start. I think
that will absolutely be, yeah, absolutely. So very clear and specific benefits there. Shelly, how are you measuring success in professional services?
Yeah, I remember when you asked me this question in our case study, and I said, it's about adoption. Mm-hmm. And for us, the way that we're looking at AI, I think there's, of course, there are productivity gains, and we can talk about those. But we look at, initially, what are the measures we're going to use? And they fall into three buckets for us. One is activation, right? Did we get something done? That second bucket is around adoption, and the third is around business impact, right? One feeds the other. If you activate, you'll have focus on adoption, and then we'll hopefully have the business impact that we expect. And so right now for AI, a lot of my focus is around adoption and making sure that the things that we're activating are being used, but we're focusing on the business impact that really we've always focused on in professional services. So I am looking at, when I'm thinking about managing risk, how fast can I get a project that's yellow or red back to green? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very simple old metric, but that's what I'm looking for acceleration in, because goodness comes out of that. Similarly, when I'm looking at the time to value for a customer that has bought Salesforce products, we want them to be using that as quickly as possible, because that's where the value comes from. So if I can make that faster, again, that's goodness. That's, yep, a metric that we've had for a very long time. I'm looking to make that even faster. So I'm not inventing new metrics, but I am being very staged in how we get there,
yeah,
making sure that any new things that we're doing, because we are asking people to do their jobs differently. Mm-hmm. As much as we can bring AI into their flow of work, which we're trying to do, it is different. We're asking people to do their jobs differently. So there is a huge adoption,
yep,
piece that goes with it. And using AI responsibly is also something we think a lot about, because we cannot afford to get it wrong.
Right. Yep. Yep. And then, Jillian, how did you measure success when you were deploying AI here?
Well, in the education industry, we've had industry benchmarks for development for a very long time on the, mm-hmm, content side. People know, you know, what a level one e-learning, how much an hour takes to develop. The same thing with translations, mm-hmm, doing things the old way. You could really optimize so much if you had a really senior development organization. But with AI, it's leaps and bounds, where we can take the time it would take us the first time we went through and did a full e-learning from end to end. We estimated something like 380 hours, and we got it out the door at almost 40% faster, mm-hmm, with the tool.
Yep.
As we continued to do more and more work, we're getting almost a 70% efficiency gain,
yep,
in time to market. This is really important for us, because in education, we are always, you know, we're stressed to do with quarterly updates, micro-learning, get information, yep, out, keep things updated, and then when do we have time to do the new stuff? So, you know, if we can gain efficiencies like this, then we can stop just focusing on sometimes the flagship products,
yep,
and expand and then grow the adoption across our portfolio. So that's a really huge one. And then certainly with translation, we've just seen, like, it's crazy how much that's changed in the last few years. So we often translate custom content. For our customers, we recently did something like 7 languages for one customer. They were,
wow,
doing a global deployment. And we see almost an 8x, like 90% of the way there. And recently we did Japanese and Chinese. And we don't have Japanese speakers or Chinese speakers on the team. We used DeepL was the tool that we used to do the translation. We had the customer review it because it was very outcome-based. It's all about them and their their deployment. And it took them about 2 hours. And mostly it's technical things or industry things. And they were super pleased. So customers are really adopting, you know, the audio, the translation, the virtual avatars. So we're just unlocking value for the customer, I think, is another big thing. Where we would develop custom material in the past, it was really linear. You know, you get to a certain point, you sign off, we can't go back, we can't change it. But now with some of these tools, we can be much more collaborative. If they want a different persona, they want, you know, a different accent, change from, you know, a British accent to an Australian accent. We want a female persona. You know, we want this, now we want this translated in multiple languages. So just the value it unlocks for them to be able to collaborate and really address how their audience wants to consume and adopt the content's been really, really fun.
I think one of my learnings in this journey in these education service use cases, and I think you and I talked about it, is the fact that, you know, the reality is education service departments are always, in a sense, understaffed, underfunded, and under duress. And there's never enough cycles. And like you said, you know, there's, how do we keep up the releases? How do I keep things fresh? Oh, the customer wants a different, you know, you've never, ever been in a position, you're just never funded enough, right? And I think that's why we see the ES organizations being so aggressive and such early adopters here is it is this escape valve, finally. It gives you capability you desperately needed where, you know, professional services, which is more self-funded from the customer, right? You're like, well, the customer's kind of paying for this. And so I think that's part of the reason why PS is lagging a little bit because your pain was just so great in education services that that's why you're leaning in.
Yeah.
So what, how do we measure success at TSI with AI?
So on the content side, just the basic metrics around volume, publications per month, per author. But again, we really want to stress the value and the quality of the writing. And so we have ratings now on every piece of content that gets created. So we've seen the game.
But we have ratings on every piece of content?
Yeah.
I want 5 stars on anything that you read that I wrote. Okay. Just, let me get that out there.
It goes right to your inbox.
Okay, cool. So, perfect.
Only the good ones. So we've seen the volume go up. We're watching the ratings and they're holding steady. And so that's just been very encouraging. On the data side, as we add in new inputs to these scoring mechanisms and different offers, the real proof will be, is it affecting conversion rates, yes or no? So are we better able to get in front of a adoption problem before it becomes a renewal problem? Are our recommendations creating better user experiences? Are people finding the recommendations more useful, getting through and giving us good ratings as an example? And then on the software side, again, we're tracking volume. So are we closing out more tickets and closing out more points in every sprint? And we are. We're seeing that happen. We watch bug tickets, and we're seeing this stay flat and go down. So those are all good signs. And then around that architectural decision, you're really trying to future-proof your business so that anyone that needs to get access to data, it should be easy for them. So we're looking at query speed. And then it's a little bit more difficult to manage, but or rather to measure. But if you design your systems well, your code should be more simple. It should be easier. And so that's mostly coming down to observations. It kind of funnels back into the more tickets being closed, code being created more quickly. But those are the things that we're looking at. And again, it's the same metrics that we've always been watching. It's sometimes hard to discern, is this AI the really driving factor, or is this just the maturation of the team? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, as long as we see success, we're going in the right direction.
Yep, perfect. So I'm watching the question board, Philip. So I'm loving this. So I want to get to these questions. So I'm gonna pressurize the system here. Every one of these case studies, we document lessons learned. And so I encourage you to read, because there's multiple lessons learned for everybody. But I want you all to think of just one lesson learned as you deployed AI, like your biggest lesson learned, right? So we can get to these. I'll start with Jillian, biggest lesson learned. One lesson.
There were a lot. I think for us, we really had to look at the people side of things. Our instructional designers are really passionate. They love to develop content that's going to be well received and activate people's minds and engage them. So with AI, there's a lot of fear, you know, because all of a sudden we're infusing these new tools. We're changing things that they did and it's automated by the tool. So really making sure that they're aware of the why and the how, showing key wins, getting early adopters in there to kind of help be the change agents and show others how it's added value, because it's really about helping them to be more innovative, be more creative, do more strategic things and meaningful things rather than let's build a bank of test questions for 6 days when now the AI could just review it and generate these test questions for you with the detractors and the right answer. You still need the human review. There's always going to be the subject matter expertise that's required. And that's a big lesson learned.
Change management is real.
Yeah.
Adoption is real. Yeah. I mean, you can't
to
take
adopt
your eye off of that.
The whole concept of AI and using it.
They need the why. Employees need the why, just like we were talking about this morning, is for sure. Yeah. I'll go down to the Informatica side of it.
So I think if I were to call out one key lesson learned is overcoming the adoption curve, very similar to what you mentioned, right? I think we are asking people to, you know, to work in a different way now. It's not the normal, right? So, taking instructions from a system or letting the system tell you what to do is not something that everybody is used to, right? So, I think that was one of that change in mindset, right, from a digital first to a digital only mindset. I think there's a lot of unlearning that needs to happen and relearning that needs to happen. So I think that's where the involving the business in this entire exercise was very key for us. So we got the entire business focus group involved. And, you know, so the trust you build is when you deploy, when you build those use cases and when you let them test it out, make sure that they're finding the value or, you know, they are realizing the value out of it during the testing phase. So that helps build the confidence. And they become the promoters. They go and, you know, talk about the value that they are seeing, right? So you need to build that network of champions within your organization and make sure you're celebrating early success, right? Yeah. It might be a very small thing, but you need to celebrate that. You need to make a big deal about it. And, you know, because for me, it's all about in the post-sales organization. So everything is centered around customer, right? So we sort of promote whatever we do across the organization, across the entire post-sales organization. It's not just, if I just roll out something for the customer success, it's not just the announcement goes only for the customer success team. It goes to the entire team. So that way, people know what we are working on. And, you know, there's no duplication of or siloed approach to these initiatives, right? So it's all channelized through my team. So that way, you know, it's a more efficient way of, you know, rolling out things here.
Perfect. Shelley, your big lesson learned.
Oh, if I can pick one.
Yes, pick one.
The one that I would pick is to probably have an experimentation mindset. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we learned is that the getting it built and connected and all the data coming in was really cool. And that was V1. Mm-hmm. And what we needed to do was learn from that and adjust what we were doing. So the initial responses that we got back were either not good or mediocre. And it wasn't because the data wasn't there. It was actually because we weren't creating the prompts in the best way possible.
Yep.
And so being able to iterate and say, okay, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And building more and more of that intelligence into the prompt until we got the quality of answers that we expected, that takes time.
Yep.
And so that keep going, the perseverance that comes with experimentation and the ability to adjust as you go would be probably our biggest lesson and to allow time for that.
Yeah. Yeah. The experiment piece of it, because I think for everyone in this room, and again, I believe everybody's workflow in this room is going to change with AI. You're building a new skill set. It's like learning a new sport. It's, you know what I'm saying? And so to your point about experimenting, you can't expect to walk in and say, you know, I'm a golfer, I'm going to be an 8 handicap. I mean, you're like, you have to understand the fact that you're going to have to, you know, practice, you're going to have to learn. And that's, I think, is absolutely the right mentality. Don't get too frustrated and know that there is going to be a power curve there. What's your one learned lesson?
Those are all great, right? So a growth mindset, vision and strategy, experimentation, continual learning. It's really people-centered and business strategy-centered. I love that. And then one lesson that we learned at TSIA is the importance of cross-functional collaboration. So we have a center of excellence for AI. We meet weekly. Every department has representation on it. It's a pull and push back and forth at departments. We're establishing standards, safety protocols, best practices. We're optimizing our prompts. And that's been invaluable.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm taking a look at these
Thomas,
questions.
Can I just add one point, if you don't mind? Sorry to interrupt. I know I saw the number in the morning where it said 50% of the projects fail, right? I think what we have noticed is it's okay to fail, but fail early. Okay. Don't try to prolong that. Pick up the next one so that, you know, you will, if you keep going on to solve a problem which is not an AI problem, then it is bound to fail. So even if you find something, make it fast, you know, make the turnaround faster.
Yep.
So I think that was one key thing I wanted to just call out because of what we heard in the morning.
So you got a bonus lesson learned there. All right. So these questions are coming. The first one I want to throw to Jillian, it's a great one. What challenges have you experienced in content creation using AI when the data you're trying to use exists in multiple silos? Did you have to manage through that?
That's pretty much a standard part of content
development. Standard.
You're using many different sources. That was one of the nice things with the Learn Experts tool. We could bring in multiple sources, multiple formats. It would organize it into learning objectives and give us just such a quick lift.
Yeah.
Right out of the gate. So it's less of a problem. Than just kind of how we curate content and knowledge assets generally. But the tools are evolving to help us.
Yeah, because one of the cool things you told me, and it relates to professional services, is the fact that you have all these subject matter experts that are out there in the company that are creating PowerPoints or, you know, documents for customers that have insights on how to use your products. And now you can actually ingest that, not just product manuals, not just standard things, but ingest all that type of content to come up with better learning content.
Absolutely. You know, the tool is really kind of that curriculum designer. So we've got all these subject matter experts with all this tribal knowledge. We've got people that are retiring in the company that spend their time doing knowledge transfer. And if you ask them to just get out of your head and put it in a consumable way, it's really difficult. You're probably not going to get what is going to be something you can widely distribute. But they don't have to know anything about learning best practices. They don't have to know when to engage. The tool will help them do that and really put that structure around it. So now any subject matter expert, you know, can develop learning content and make it available and digitally scale it, obviously, so thousands of people can access it instead of like the one-on-one or in the room with a group of people.
So
it's pretty game-changing.
So I think one of the powerful things about this technology.
Yeah.
There's a question here of how do you approach explaining complex AI decisions to non-technical colleagues? I'm going to punt this one to you. So how do you explain AI to people like me and JB?
I use AI. Document everything, right? Document everything, preferably in one place. That's the best practice. So for our developers, every decision that we make as a development team, we build out frameworks and we sort of put in the goals, the objectives, we do pros and cons list, and then we put it in a single repository. The data engineering team does the same thing. The editing team does the same thing. And then quite honestly and literally, in that project space that we have a great AI search and AI summarize capability. And so you can find out, how does TSIA's search work? Or why did we create, you know, these offer scores in that way, and what's behind the science there. You can ask the question in your own format. You can iterate with it if it came back with too technical of an answer. And so, quite honestly, AI is enabling the user to ask the questions in the unique way to them, and they can iterate to get the right answer. But you got to document everything.
Well, to your point, I was just talking to it was HPE last week on a case study, and the gentleman, he's based over in Germany. He started talking about how they're using it within support, and he started rattling off, you know, well, we had to look at, you know, is it rainforest algorithms versus linear out? And he starts throwing all this stuff out there, and I'm like, whoa, I am in way over my head, right? So the first thing I did after because took the transcript, went through it, is I went to AI and I'm like, explain what these things are in a way that I can understand it and I could get it. So absolutely. So that's a good tactic. I'm curious, this is a PS1. So Shally, for you, what did you implement in PS to augment flat, or what would you maybe, to augment flat headcount, but maintain customer satisfaction with growing PS demand? In other words, this is this classic, I got more revenue.
More with less?
Yeah, exactly. More, right. More with less. So yeah, how do you approach that, or how would you approach that?
I think there's a huge opportunity in professional services to be able to do more and more. I'm going to characterize in two different ways, right? Yep. One is to accomplish the same work faster. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked a lot about acceleration opportunities. If you can take something that took days into minutes, that's one type of acceleration. For us, things like requirements gathering, user story generation, like that's actually very time consuming. There's a huge opportunity for acceleration around that, around testing, right? Yeah. I think the other, though, that is more exciting on the more with less is let's actually do more. Like, let's take advantage of additional business processes if we're focused on automation. Let's make that capability richer. And I think we have the opportunity to actually, in that same time period with the same people, unlock more for us product value for our customers in that same period of time so that they benefit more. So I think that this can go either way.
Yep. There's a question in there around personalizing content for customers. You've already on this with the education, huge opportunity to create materials now for a certain persona, different languages, et cetera. I'm curious on the customer success side, anything around how you're leveraging AI to create a more personalized experience for customers?
Absolutely. I think foundational for this is going to be the data and the content, right? Data here is the profile of your customer, the 360-degree view of your customer. Who is the customer? What is the user's role in the organization? What is that they're trying to achieve? How are they engaging with us? And what does success look like for them, right? And then you tie it back into the content. So we have, to give you an example, when a success plan is created for an account, right? So we have this personalized learning paths that are created as well, right? So which can be recommended to the customer. Yep. So our mantra is deliver the right content to the right user at the right time, at the place of their preference or the channel of their preference. It could be an email, or it could be the web, or it could be within the product. Yep. So that's how we sort of, use the customer profile and the relevant content to sort of engage the customer in the right place.
Yep. I'll put one on the table here. And this is a case study with, it was a leader of customer success. It's not published yet, so I won't mention the company. But what was super fascinating to me was they have an AI product that they are, deploying with customers. And they are, like most of us, they go to market very horizontally, right? Hey, yes, you can go to my website and I have a healthcare, case study or whatever, but I don't know a lot about healthcare, right? I don't know a lot about financial services. I just have this product that's classic. And so she was telling me that, to get customers to truly get the value of the AI, you actually have to understand their workflows. You actually have to understand how is, a bank going to use this as opposed to, a hospital.
Yes.
So what was really cool is that they were leveraging AI to educate the CSMs on the nuances of each of these verticals. And so literally AI to do something that in tech we really don't like to do, which is verticalize our go-to-market. And I thought that is a wicked cool use case right there, because that's allows you to add a lot more value. And again, I was on this morning. I think AI is going to allow us to get way more dialed into the, you know, the business outcomes our customers want. And so that's just another example of, you know, creating a much more personalized experience. Let's see, what else do we have here? What were the ROI and success metrics / KPIs to drive customer experience and customer business outcomes? So putting the lens on it for, you know, how the customer is going to be successful. I'm going to pick on you again, Shally, in terms of from the PS, you know, you're working with the customers, you got these big projects, as you're deploying AI, how do you think about it in terms of how it moves things for them?
I think for there's a couple of different ways to think about it. One is time to value, right? We talked about the faster that we can get people using the products, the faster it is in terms of business impact.
Yeah.
And every one of our business impact analysis talks about that. Mm-hmm. So that's the easiest answer.
Mm-hmm.
I think for, if I take that one step further and think about the AI capabilities that are also embedded in the products that are being implemented and those become activated for our customers, it's a compounding benefit. So not only are they taking advantage of what they bought faster, they are able to use some of those AI capabilities. And so from a customer facing things, that can be on the sales side, right? Making sales teams more engaged, selling the right things, better returns. We know about customer service. You've talked a lot about success as well. All of those are phenomenal outcomes that I think the more that AI starts to permeate how not just our direct customers, but how they serve their customers, I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll just keep hammering this point home. I mean, I believe that, you know, as we deploy AI, it allows us to get zeroed in on the KPIs the customer really cares about. So it's like, can you shrink the time of my deployment? Can you increase adoption? Can you help me with, you know, revenue per employee? Can you help me? I mean, tell me how you're going to dial in to that by leveraging these technologies. I mean, I think that is absolutely where the game is going to be played for sure. One more question here, I'll grab here. Is there enough focus on the ethics in AI development and deployment within the industry? This has come up a couple times today. We had a great conversation a couple hours ago with a group around, you know, some customers are just super nervous and they're like, I just don't want AI involved. Just don't use AI in my deployment. How are you dealing with sort of any ethical discussions internally as companies about AI? And I know you're all over this. I'm gonna pick on you again, Shally.
Yeah.
So if you can, you know, how are you approaching this at Salesforce?
Well, Salesforce takes this super seriously,
yeah.
Right? So we have an office of ethical use. Mm-hmm. We've had that for a number of years. The woman who leads that is phenomenal and has actually been leading the charge on the ethical use of AI,
yeah,
sort of in the technology space. And so I think we benefit from a lot of considerations that go into that. One of the biggest takeaways that I would want to share with all of you from that is, it matters. Like, you really have to spend the time to think about this. The way that Salesforce has thought about this is to say, we take our customer data very seriously, and we're not going to share it externally with models.
Mm-hmm.
We're not. And so we have created something that we call our trust layer, and it does a lot of things that protect against toxicity, bias, hallucinations.
Yep.
It does not give the data away. It masks a lot of critical information before it comes through. And so we look at it as, anytime that we're using AI, we want to do it in a very trusted way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we use our trust layer. Every use case that I'm looking at from AI has to go through,
mm-hmm,
that trust layer. And we've set up the appropriate governance across the company. We have AI councils. We have a lot of legal expertise on this as well to make sure that we're looking at it responsibly.
Yeah.
When it kind of comes back down to what my team is doing before we go out and implement this, we talked a little bit about this protecting customer data, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Knowing the difference between customer data, metadata,
right.
and how you differentiate between those two is a learning for, yep. for all of us. And we're making sure that we're very clear about the differences around that so that we maintain those ethics
yeah.
standards. It does take a lot of careful consideration and a lot of ongoing training and enablement and building in the right thoughtful protections along the way so that you're not relying on each person to remember every element of yep. their training yep. as they're going through. I find that a little worrisome.
You need bumpers,
We need bumpers. Yeah. I think that's exactly it. Guardrails yep. yep. along the way to make sure that we're following those things. It is something that I feel is super yep. important to think about as you have more and more AI use cases.
So on this conversation of data, leveraging customer data, is again, as we all get our MBAs in operationalizing AI concepts we were talking about a couple hours ago. So there's the core customer data, the real customer data. There's metadata, which is one step removed from that. So it helps. We talked about synthetic data. That's another concept if you're not familiar with. So there's a lot of different ways, right? Mm-hmm. But you got to have the guardrails. You got to be smart about it. There's just no doubt about it. All right. We are almost out of time. I'm going to see if there's one more that I can go. There's one there that said for Jillian. For Jillian, can you elaborate? This is very specific. Can you elaborate on the value and savings in translating all those hours of content? The value. It's
okay. So first off, with translation, when we're developing our standard content, it is very much towards a technical audience. Most people function pretty efficiently with English, so we don't do a lot of translation on the standard content. Where we do a ton of translation is on custom adoption projects for our customers that are rolling it out. And I worked for IBM years ago. We had a world translation organization, and Japanese language is a great example. It was like 23 days per one day. Like yeah. it's just,
wow.
there's so much there. So that's where we see yeah. It being utilized. And we utilize translation to the benefit of the customer to make value to them yeah. versus translating just because we're operating in yeah. certain countries. So,
yeah, I mean, I said this morning, I'm going to say it again, and I keep picking on education services, but seriously, if you're in education services and you are not leveraging AI for translation, for some of this content development, I think like that's at this point, it's already a problem. You got some more runway in PS, you're okay. CS, you're okay. Still, you got some more runway, you guys are okay. But in ES, it's like these cases are so well proven and the ROI is just crazy. So we are out of time. It's blinking at me. I really want to thank you folks for a great conversation. I encourage you to go check out their case studies. They're fantastic. There's more of these that are going to be coming out. I'm sure the panel will be around here as we all head over the expo. So please feel free to ask questions we didn't get to. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you, panel.